This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Zane's The Other Side of the Pillow by Zane. Read by Heaven Hanover and Bridge Carpenter, with an afterword read by the author.
Some people never get to meet their heroes. I gave birth to mine. For my children. Gemistry. Prologue. Violence can only be concealed by a lie, and the lie can only be maintained by violence. Alexander Solzhenitsyn. 2000. It had been 3 weeks since the abortion. What a way to kick off the new millennium. At a time when I should have been happy, recently getting my master's in education, working as a high school social studies teacher, and making decent money, all I felt was ashamed. Wesley had been making an attempt to improve his behavior. He had no idea that I had been pregnant. As far as I was concerned, he never would find out that I had killed our child. I didn't want to do it, never thought that I would find myself in that place, not to mention that I had never imagined that I could go through with it. But I had, and not another living soul knew about it, with the exception of the people at the clinic. I had not shared it with any of my family or friends. I could not bear to have them think anything negative about me. "What's for dinner?" Wesley asked as he walked into the kitchen of the townhouse we were renting in Georgetown. "I'm starved." "I made some chicken and noodles and a spinach salad," I replied, washing the pots in the sink. I always preferred to clean up before eating. Afterward, I would be too stuffed to do it, and I did not believe in leaving dirty dishes overnight. "I'll get you a plate. Why don't you go wash up and I'll have everything together by the time you get finished?" After I had served both of us, I sat down across from him at the dining room table. Wesley started digging into his food like there was no tomorrow. I stared at him. Even though he was incredibly good-looking, that was not enough to overshadow all of his actions. "You're too good of a woman to keep putting up with his shit," I thought. He was guzzling his beer, having not noticed that I had yet to touch my plate, when I blurted out, "I'm leaving you." He almost spit the liquid out, but managed to swallow it as he placed the bottle back down.
"Don't be ridiculous, Gemistry. You and I both know that you're not going anywhere."
"I am going. I'll leave tonight and come back tomorrow or this weekend for my things, if that's cool with you."
"No, the shit is not cool with me," he yelled out in anger. "You're not going anyplace. I won't allow it."
I sighed. "I'm grown and I can do what I want. We're not married and..."
"Yet," he interjected. "We're not married yet, but we will be."
"Never," I exclaimed, getting loud myself.
"It's over, Wesley."
He smirked and took another bite of his food.
"All you've ever wanted was me. Now you think that you're going to walk off into the night like everything is everything? You sound foolish."
"No, I've been foolish, and that's the point. I've allowed you to walk all over me for 2 years, and I will not do it another day, not even another second." I had truly reached that second. The second that I realized that I would not tolerate his bullshit for another second of another hour of another day. "You act like you can keep doing whatever to me, and I'm going to take it," I added. He smirked again, his gray eyes staring me down as if I were an enemy, which is how he treated me half the time, like a gladiator he was facing in an arena.
"You've been taking it. What's the difference now?" Wesley, I'll admit that I have been weak. I've held out hope that one day you would wake up, a light bulb would turn on in your head, and you would understand that cheating on me, beating on me, and treating me like your property isn't appropriate. He sighed. I haven't done anything lately, Gemistry. Give me a break. It's true and ironic that I finally arrived at this point when you're actually acting decent. But it's only a matter of time before you fuck around on me again or have me getting bandaged up on an emergency room table.
I thought you were over that, he said matter-of-factly.
Over it? You put a pillowcase over my head and beat me half to death. How does one get over that exactly?
The bastard actually laughed.
You tell me. You dropped the charges, came back home, and went right back to sucking my dick every night. Seems to me like you got over it pretty damn quick.
You disgust me.
In truth, I disgusted myself because he was right. I had relinquished all my common sense and self-respect in the name of love. I used to scoff at women who stayed with men who cheated on them or hit them. Yet, there I was, with one who took pride in doing both. I got up from the table and headed to the kitchen to get my purse and keys. I didn't plan to stay there another minute. I would get a hotel room for a few days and figure things out from there. Look for an apartment that was available immediately, or at least within the next few weeks. Before I could even get the strap of my purse situated on my shoulder, Wesley was punching me in the back of my head. I dropped to the floor and covered myself to prevent his rage from causing too much damage.
You filthy bitch, he screamed. No one leaves me. I leave them.
He hit me until he lost his breath and eventually his footing. That was all the opportunity I needed. I got up onto my knees and grabbed the cast iron skillet out of the drainer in the sink, then stood up and with a swinging motion, hit him across the temple. He was caught completely off guard and stunned and then dropped to the floor, wincing in pain while I grabbed my keys and headed to the door. I paused and looked down at him. An expression of shock was still on his face.
You'll live, I said.
I did, and I hope this makes you think twice before you put your hands on another female. I'll be back here tomorrow with a sheriff to get my things. Now you can go to the emergency room and say that you fell.
When I got outside into the fresh air and started walking toward my old 1987 Buick Century, a sense of pride overcame me. It had been a long time coming, but I was reclaiming my life, my dignity, and my heart. I refused to believe that all men were like Wesley. I had simply made the wrong choice and had attempted to change him. I now realized that it was never about me. It was about a sickness within him and a need to humiliate and control women. Little did I know back then that Wesley was only the first of a string of men who would run ramshod over me. It would be a cycle that would continue for the next 12 years. Shame on it all.
Chapter 1.
People put up walls, not to keep others out, but to see who cares enough to break them down. Socrates. 2013. Poetry night at the Carolina Kitchen near the Rhode Island Metro Station was packed. There were a handful of people there that I recognized from Howard, but most were strangers. That gave me a feeling of relief. I had never recited my poetry live before. Actually, I was not a poet at all. I was a venter. I had placed my name on the list to read a piece that I had appropriately titled Bitter. It was the way that I felt, so it made all the sense in the world to select it for my first and probably last time reading in public. I was nervous, but sipping on a chocolate martini was helping.
There was a young Rastafarian up at bat, reciting something about women with big booties who believed that their sex was their best asset. He was going on and on about how women needed to stop acting like a thought, that hoe over there, and needed to demand respect for themselves. I was feeling him and wished that my roommate were there to hear it. I was far from celibate, but Winsome was straight wilding out the majority of the time. He finished up his piece to mass applause and finger snapping. I was hoping that they would call at least two or three other names before mine so I could finish my drink. Even though I spoke in front of my students and faculty all the time, this was different. My words would be personal and from the heart. Queen Aisha, the comedic host for the evening, came back on stage working her fabulous hips, rocking her attention-getting hairstyle, and grabbed the microphone. "That was hot, Brother Hakeem. I hope some of the young ladies in this joint tonight take heed of your words." She shielded her eyes and glanced out at the audience like she was trying to find someone in particular. "Yeah, I see some chicks dressed like thoughts tonight. Y'all advertising, and that's all I have to say about that." Most of the audience laughed, but I noticed some of the scantily clad chicks were offended. I could barely keep up with all the terminology meant solely to degrade women. Thought was a new one. Ho, chicken head, bird, and the good old-fashioned whore were tossed around on the regular. The sad part was that a lot of women had started to embrace the monikers and often called one another those names. Thank goodness that I had chosen a simple outfit. Black jeans, black boots, a black sweater, and a black beanie studded with little silver stars. I was in a militant mood, so my clothes reflected my attitude. "All right, we're going to move on." Queen Aisha looked down at the tablet in her free hand. "Next up is Gemistry. Damn, love that name." So much for finishing my martini. I sighed and navigated my way to the front as people looked at me strangely, as if to say, "You better bring it after Brother Hakeem put it down." No doubt, he was a tough act to follow. I took the stage and Queen Aisha handed me the microphone, grinned, and sashayed off. She was so confident in herself. I wish I could have said the same. I cleared my throat and tried to imagine that the room was empty, that I was simply practicing like I had done several times at home earlier that day. This piece is called Bitter. It's for all the sisters out there who have been hurt despite giving their all and being all that they can be for men who do not appreciate them. Several women yelled out things like, "That's right, amen, sister," and "Preach." Several men hissed and booed and acted like I had called them out by their government names. I cleared my throat again and then started spitting out the words. Slowly, concisely, and from the pit of my soul, where all of my own personal pain and bitterness collided. Hurt, pain, anguish, bitter. That is how I feel as a woman who has been deceived, betrayed, disrespected, humiliated, dismissed, used, demeaned, abused, mistreated. It makes no sense. No sense at all. I am a good woman, a brilliant woman, a compassionate woman, a loving woman, an educated woman, a beautiful woman, a romantic woman, a unique and special woman. So why do men overlook me? Or come into my life and play games, use Jedi mind tricks, spit out bullshit lies, expect me to share dick, expect me to tolerate their shit, say one thing and do another, call me names and expect me to be their lover, hit on me and then try to kiss me, talk shit behind my back? Hurt, pain, anguish, bitter. Those are the words that describe me. Those are the terms that define me. Now it is time for me to find me before it is too late and my heart can no longer participate in what people call love in a true relationship. Bitter? That's me. I opened my eyes, which I had clamped shut at some point halfway through, and there was an eerie silence over the entire place for a few seconds. Then there was mass applause and cheers from the women. A few men clapped and many were shaking their heads and crossing their arms in defiance. Their egos were bruised, but they knew that I had spoken nothing but the truth. They were going to learn that day. As I walked off the stage, Queen Aisha came up to announce the next poet. She grinned at me and whispered, "You said that. That was some real shit right there." When I returned to my seat at the bar, there was a man sitting on the stool next to mine. I hadn't noticed him before. I wondered if he had come in while I was performing. He was almost like a giant, at least 6'5" compared to my 5'2" height. Even though he was sitting, I could tell that he was like a tree. He had a smooth, dark chocolate complexion, eyes the shade of almonds, a polished fade, and he wore rimless eyeglasses. The bartender came over to me. "Need anything else?" "Can I have another chocolate martini, please?" The guy kept staring at me, and I wondered if he was about to go off on me about what I had said on stage. After another minute or two, once my fresh drink was in front of me, I could not take the stares anymore. There was an older woman on stage reciting a poem about the joys of menopause and moving on to the next stage of life. He was not paying attention to her at all. He was too busy watching my every move. "The entertainment is that way," I pointed toward the stage. "I'm finished with my performance." He grinned and exposed a beautiful smile and straight teeth. "I enjoyed your piece. Bitter, wasn't it?" I rolled my eyes. "Here it comes." "Yes, it was called Bitter. That's what I am." "I kind of figured that, and it's such a shame." He looked me up and down like I was on display. I was hoping that my face wasn't shiny from having been underneath the hot lights, even momentarily. "You're too beautiful, sassy, and intriguing to be bitter over a man from your past." "Actually, you stand corrected. I am bitter regarding several men from my past. All of the men from my past, not a single one of them appreciated any of the goodness in me until after I was gone."
"So now the rest of us men can forget it, huh?"
I took a sip of my drink and analyzed what he was implying with his question. The Virgo in me kicked in. One thing is a definite trait among Virgos. We overthink and overanalyze like crazy. On the one hand, I was sick of men to a degree, at least a whimsical fantasy that one man could make a commitment to one woman and do the right thing by her. On the other hand, I loved sex, and the specimen sitting beside me was most certainly a candidate for some freaky sex. He kept looking at me as the menopausal broad left the stage.
"Well,
I never said that no man has a chance with me. All I'm saying is that I'm not going to be so quick to throw my heart on the line again, unless a man presents himself correctly and is done with playing games. You feel me?"
"Somewhat."
He took a long guzzle from his draft beer.
"But you have to realize that not all men have to be done with playing games. Some of us have never played them."
I smirked.
"That's what you all say.
All of you proclaim to be honest, trustworthy, and interested in settling down up and until you get into a woman's panties and move on to the next one."
Wow. Someone has really hurt you.
Several someones have trampled all over me. They've treated me like a piece of disposable pussy or a deer that has already been hit in the road. Instead of picking me up and trying to resuscitate me, or better yet, leaving me the hell alone to suffer in silence, they run over me again and try to finish the job that the previous dude started.
He shook his head and frowned. It would probably be in my best interest to move to the other side of the bar and wish you a good evening.
I shrugged. Probably would be.
He sat there for a few more seconds, still staring.
Probably would be, I repeated.
Yes, probably, he chuckled. But instead, I'd like to pay for your drinks and ask if you'd like to head someplace quieter so we can continue this fascinating discussion.
He reached out his hand. I'm Tevin Harris. I shook his hand. Chemistry Daniels. I'm not so convinced this is a fascinating discussion, though.
I'm fascinated.
I smirked and continued drinking.
Another brother had taken the stage, but I was really drowning him out. He was talking about some kind of impending race war. That always amused me when people said things like that, as if we were still in the 1800s. I had always wanted to ask at least one person spouting that foolishness whom they planned to start a race war with, considering that most families were mixed with several different ones.
So, Chemistry, would you like to take me up on my offer?
He is not giving up.
I hesitated to respond. He seemed harmless enough, but so do most serial killers. Most are also charming as all get out.
Tell you what. I'm not trying to hurt your feelings or anything, but I'm not the most trusting person, as you might suspect.
He chuckled. Yeah, that's kind of evident.
I prefer to close out my own tab. I ordered the drinks, so I'll pay for them. It is kind of noisy in here to talk, so I can meet you somewhere else.
I held my index finger up in his face. But I'm not getting in a car with you, nor are you getting into mine.
I already had it in my head that the only thing that talking could possibly lead to was fucking. I would make arrangements with him, as I had with two other men at the time, to come over and have some drive-by sex when the urge hit me. I was attracted to him. He was tall and had big feet, so I was guessing that he had a big dick.
What the hell?
Fair enough. He threw a 20 on the bar for his beers. Do you have a place in mind?
How about Oya over on 9th and H?
Never heard of it, but I'll meet you there in a few.
He stood up. Yeah, he was a giant, but a fine one. I could not help but drop my eyes to see his dick imprint in his slacks. I suppressed a smile.
Would you allow me to walk you to your car, Chemistry?
No, thank you. I'll be fine. I'm going to pay for my drinks and then head that way.
He walked off as he said, I hope you show.
I watched him leave out and wondered to myself if I would show up. The key to the entire thing would be to make sure I didn't catch any feelings. That was always the hard part. Having a big heart, desiring to be loved, and trying to avoid falling too hard for a man, especially a man like him. People always said that you have to judge each person by their own character, but it was not easy to keep tossing my heart on the line all the time. Most men I could brush off without a second thought. But there was something different about this one. Heaven help me.
Chapter 2.
One day, you'll meet someone who doesn't care about your past because they want to be with you in your future. Anonymous. As I valeted at Oya, I was on my cell with Winsome.
She was freaking out because I was actually taking a chance.
I can't believe you didn't tell him to beat it, she said through my headset. Normally, when dudes approach you, you act like a fool and dismiss them before they can get two words out.
I laughed. I'm not that bad.
Gemistry, please. When we're in the store or whatnot, you throw so much shade toward anyone who even blinks at you that they're too intimidated to speak.
She paused and giggled.
I don't believe it. You're lying.
Well, I'm not lying, so believe it. I'm actually meeting up with a man. I wanted to alert you to my whereabouts in case something happens.
Winsome laughed from the other end. You are so damn paranoid. You met him in a public place and you're meeting him in another public place. How do you ever expect to settle down if you think every man is a sociopath?
He might be a damn sociopath. Time will tell, and it's not like I've never attracted them before. Did you forget about Paul?
Paul wasn't a sociopath. Paul was a man whore.
Same difference.
We both laughed as the valet handed me a ticket.
So, is he fine? Winsome asked.
Have you sucked more than 10 dicks in the past year?
The valet stared at me like I was crazy. It probably made his dick hard, though.
I smiled and kept walking toward the entrance.
Fuck you, Chemistry.
I'm about the only person you know that you haven't fucked.
Bye, Heffa.
Winsome hung up, and while my words had been stated jokingly, I really did need to have a talk with her about slowing her roll. Winsome was bisexual, so she was doing the most. She was exceptionally beautiful, and that only escalated her ability to get random people into her bed. She was originally from Trinidad, but she relocated to the States to attend Howard, which is where we met. She had flawless skin the color of a coconut, dark brown eyes that seemed to stare right through you, and deep dimples that complemented her 5'2" petite frame. Men and women were constantly drawn to her like moths to a flame. While I was good at deflecting people, Winsome had this come-hither look about her. I enjoyed sex, but she loved sex, and my issue was that she always had numerous people trying to get into her panties. We were both single, so it was whatever. Yet and still, she was prone to bring strangers to our place, and that was when the drama started. Some felt like they could drop by whenever, some never wanted to leave, and others simply looked suspect to me. Like they might jump off the edge of a cliff and go off if things did not go their way. Her business was only my business because we were roommates, and I would often walk into some mess, or wake up to some mess, and it was just messy. Tevin was sitting at the bar near the entrance of Oya. I loved the spot because it had a Miami type of feel in the heart of downtown D.C. With all white leather seats, white tables, and white and gray marble floors and walls, the atmosphere was intimate and relaxing.
You showed, Tevin exclaimed. I didn't ask for a table yet. I didn't want to take a walk of shame if you stood me up.
Walk of shame?
Yes. When a person sits at a table looking crazy and staring at the door to the point where people at other tables start watching the door to see if the person is going to be stood up or not. Then they have to try to make an uncomfortable exit while people snicker at them under their breath.
That actually makes sense. Walk of shame. I have to remember that one.
I giggled and looked into his eyes. Damn shame, he was so sexy.
I'll be honest, I had a little debate with myself about coming, but you seem harmless, so far.
He shrugged. The best thing about having a debate with yourself is that you always win.
We both laughed.
That's true, I said. An uncomfortable silence fell between us for a few seconds. Then he said, "Once you get to know me, I hope you come to a final conclusion on whether I'm harmless or not." We just met and I don't even know anything about you, except that you're fine and extremely cautious about my fellow brethren. I have no reason to mislead you.
No one else had a reason to mislead me either.
Tevin frowned. Listen, Gemistry, I love your name. I love your vibe, and I want a fair chance to get to know you. But if all of the drama from your past is about to take a seat at the table with us, I'd rather call it a night now. He was right. I was taking it too far.
I apologize. You have a point, Tevin. I can't promise that I'll never mention another word about my past. It's a part of who I am. I'm not sure how we can truly learn about one another without discussing some elements from both of our pasts. That is what has shaped us into the two people standing here in this moment. However, I'll try to keep my bitterness about days gone by in check.
Tevin stared at me for a few seconds, like he was having his own internal debate. Like he said, he was going to win either way. He finally said,
I agree. All I'm saying is that if you're going to automatically disqualify me because of what I have hanging between my legs, it's pointless.
When he mentioned what he had between his legs, my pussy thumped. Currently, I was going back and forth between two lovers, but it was all about sex. Nothing more, nothing less. I was about to interview Tevin to see if he could be the third person in my rotation, but he didn't need to know all of that. I held up my index and middle fingers. I, Gemistry Daniels, do solemnly swear that I will not unjustly discriminate against Tevin Harris for the simple fact that he is a man. Finally, I got a bona fide laugh out of him.
Cool beans. Let's grab a table.
Chapter 3. The only abnormality is the incapacity to love. Anais Nin. I pulled into the building garage for the condo that Winsome and I shared on 16th Street in Adams Morgan about 2 a.m. Getting to know Tevin had been an enlightening experience. Turns out that he was a vascular surgeon at Sibley Memorial, which made him smart as shit. I was about to be in serious trouble because I loved an ambitious and smart man, not to mention smooth, which he definitely was. We shared a late dinner and amazing conversation. Gazing into his eyes over the candlelight and being serenaded by his deep, sensual voice was too much for me. Even the way that he ate sushi turned me on. I sat in my 2011 Nissan Rogue for a moment and digested it all. This is how it always begins, I said aloud. You fall for a man too soon, and then the proverbial shit hits the fan. I had agreed to see Tevin again, but did not commit to a specific day or time. I told him to call me the next day at work. I could not believe that I had stayed out so late on a Wednesday when I had to be in my office by 8. Being a high school principal was not an easy feat, but it was a rewarding one. Teens had a bad rap overall. Most of my students were simply trying to get an education amidst the pandemonium created by the 5% of students who had been failed by their parents and believed that making a spectacle of themselves would be their claim to fame. I was not having it, not at Mega Evers High School. Tevin said that he was 34, and I was 37. Not a big deal, but I preferred to date men at least my age or older. Then again, I didn't want to actually date him. I only wanted to fuck him, so it didn't matter. As long as I kept repeating those intentions to myself, I would be fine. When I walked into the front door of our condo, I couldn't believe my eyes. Then again, I shouldn't have been the least bit astonished by anything Winsome did. After all, she worked as a fake review writer from home. Yes, it was actually a paid position. Companies such as hotels, restaurants, and retail chains paid her to post positive comments on all the major review websites like Yelp, TripAdvisor, and Zagat. She made her own schedule and only had to send in a weekly list of all the reviews that she had posted in order to get paid. That was one of the reasons why I never paid attention to reviews, at least not the positive ones. A lot of those were fabricated. I was sure that Winsome was not the only one working those sites on the regular. The sites were not at fault, since they were simply offering consumers the opportunity to vent about their experiences and to make recommendations. I was planning to kick off my shoes, sit on the sofa, and watch the latest episode of Paternity Court on the DVR after I tossed my purse and keys on the small table in the foyer and walked into the living room. When I first heard that they were making a show with that title, I talked major shit. It was mind-boggling to me that the paternity of so many children could be in question, that it warranted an entire show on the topic. Maury already covered that topic about 3 days a week on the regular. But the thing that fascinated me the most about Paternity Court was Judge Lauren Lake's hair. It was always flawless. Half the time, I could not even concentrate on the cases since I was staring at her hair. I kept meaning to ask my stylist if she thought it was her real hair, a wig, or a weave. Whatever it was banging, and it made me want to step up my game. As much as I proclaimed that I would never watch a show like that, I was all into it. I would often get emotional over some of the guests, and when they showed the little kids playing in the toy area on the screen, I would want to pick them up and embrace them one at a time. Then they had adults who would make an appearance in order to finally discover whom their biological fathers were for once and for all. Part of my issue with men was that my father had died before I was even born. The one man that I should have been able to count on to love and protect me never even got to meet me. He was a Metropolitan Police officer, and he died in a high-speed car chase at the infamous intersection of Minnesota Avenue and Benning Road. My mother was never the same. Well, I can't say if she was the same or not, but that was how everyone else in the family described her. Never the same. All I know is that she was depressed for my entire childhood, sedated by all kinds of medications, and never loved another man up until she died of breast cancer when she was 52. I heard the moaning before I saw the action. Then I saw nothing but tits, asses, and one big-ass dick. Winsome was having a threesome with a man and another woman. I had never laid my eyes on either one of them before. She was in the middle of enjoying her own little slice of heaven, lying on her back as the man fed her his dick and the woman ate out her pussy. I kicked off one of my black boots and threw it at Winsome's tits. What the fuck are you doing? I can't freaking believe this. The chick stopped eating her out immediately and looked petrified. I was betting she thought I was Winsome's woman coming home, catching her in the act. That exact scenario had happened before, and I had to make it clear that I had zero interest in Winsome's coochie. I simply didn't care to see it under any circumstances. The man could not have cared less and probably thought that after a few seconds of bitching, I would want to join in since his dick was so big. Nope, wasn't happening. He was still trying to shove more of his man-ding-a-ling down her throat, trying to get his. Winsome pushed his dick away from her and sat up. Damn, chemistry! Why are you throwing boots and all of that? It's not that serious. Not that serious, I rolled my eyes. It's 2 a.m. and you have strangers up in here fucking you on the sofa that I bought. The one that I sit on to eat my oatmeal every morning and watch my favorite shows on at night. The one that my company sits on to chill. You got musty dick and pussy juice drizzling all over it, and you don't think it's serious? Winsome stood up, tits swinging.
First of all, there... Don't first of all me like I've done something trifling. I spoke to you a few hours ago, and you said that you were here chilling and working.
I looked the guy in the eyes and then the broad.
You a call girl now? Did they find you on Craigslist or some shit?
No, I'm not no call girl, and you know it. All I was trying to say is that they're not strangers. I've known them for a minute.
She ran her fingers through the woman's reddish-brown hair.
This is KK.
What's up?
KK said nervously, still probably shocked that I walked in.
Winsome ran the fingers of her other hand down the man's chest. And this fine thing right here is Dominic.
Dominic stared at me, up and down, and licked his lips.
What's good, cutie?
Winsome folded her arms in defiance. See, they're definitely not strangers.
The fact that you happen to know their names doesn't mean that they're not strangers.
Put on some damn clothes and get them out of here.
I walked past the sofa toward my bedroom and waved them off.
You can miss me with all of that.
I paused and turned around glaring at Winsome.
On the sofa, though? You're buying a new one. I'm never sitting on that shit again.
I went into my room and slammed the door. After undressing, I went into my bathroom and hopped into the shower. By the time that I threw on a nightgown, Winsome was poking her head in my door.
How did the date go with that dude?
I rolled my eyes at her.
His name is Tevin. He's cool. I plan to hang out with him again sometime.
Thank goodness! You need a man!
Winsome came in and sat down on the edge of my bed. She had on a black t-shirt that had beat me, whip me, fuck me, come all over my tits, and then get the fuck out, printed in white letters on the front, and a pair of white sweatpants.
I'm tired of you disrupting my flow.
Winsome, you're a trip. I'm not disrupting a damn thing that doesn't need to be disrupted. You are sexing way too many people at the same time. And from what I saw tonight, with no damn protection.
Oh, come off it. We were doing oral when you came in. You will not make me believe that you use dental dams and condoms when you're serving up your pussy or slobbering on a dick. Don't even try it.
I'm not going to try, but the difference between you and me is that I only have sex with a couple of people.
I paused and started analyzing what she had said a moment ago.
And I could have a man if I wanted one, and you know it. I'm sick of the bullshit, so I'd rather stay single and do me. Relieve my sexual tension when I feel like it and keep it moving.
You push men away the second they start talking about getting serious. There are a lot of chicas out there who want a man to tie them down, and you push them all away.
I climbed underneath my comforter and turned on the news. I really wanted to go watch Paternity Court, but I was serious about that sofa. I was donating it to a nonprofit and making Winsome purchase a new one, but not before I laid down some ground rules.
You can't be fucking all over the place, Winsome. That's not cool.
You're getting a new sofa, and you'd better not have done anything on the dining room table.
She sucked her teeth.
I'm not that damn nasty.
At this point, I wouldn't put anything past you.
It suddenly hit me.
You've never fucked someone in my bed while I'm at work, have you?
No, don't nobody want to fuck in your scraggly little queen-size bed when I have a California king.
As much as you play in your pussy, ain't nobody got time for that.
I laughed, picked up a pillow, and threw it at her head. I did have quite the toy collection to knock the edge off.
Get out of my room. I have to be at work in 5 hours.
She got up and headed out.
What did you think of Dominic and KK?
I shrugged as I reached for my lamp switch to cut it off.
What is there to think? You were just doing them, right?
Or are you contemplating doing some kind of polyamorous nonsense?
I don't even know what the fuck that is, Winsome responded sarcastically.
The devil is a liar. You know exactly what it is.
She grinned.
We were just doing it. They're actually siblings, though.
I stopped worrying about the lamp switch. Siblings? That's disgusting.
It wasn't disgusting for me, and it's not like they did anything together.
Didn't they?
No, they did not. You didn't see no shit like that going down. Both of them were doing me, but that's it.
I glared at Winsome like she was crazy.
You need to chill before you end up with some incurable disease and come crying on my shoulder.
Get some sleep, I'll holler.
Winsome closed the door, and as I was reaching for the lamp switch again, I noticed a text message that must have come in during my shower. It was from Tevin.
Just checking on you to make sure you got home.
Damn, even surgeons are using text shorthand, I said to myself. But it did make me blush, and that was a feeling that was both unexpected and unwelcomed. There was no way that I was trying to catch feelings for him, but it was going to be a challenge unless I refused to ever see him again. I opted not to respond to the text, cut off the light, and laid there in the dark, struggling to fall asleep. I got maybe 2 hours total before I had to get up and head to school.
Chapter 4. The giving of love is an education in itself. Eleanor Roosevelt.
All students, please report to your homerooms immediately.
Lily Beth Parker was the school secretary. I am not sure why she felt the need to make that announcement every school day. There was not a single student in the entire high school that didn't realize their asses needed to be in their respective homerooms by 8:35 a.m. or they'd be considered tardy.
Lily Beth, did we ever get those test scores in?
No, not yet, Miss Daniels.
Do you want me to call the school board and check on them?
I stood beside her desk, considering how I wanted to respond.
No, that's okay. Hopefully they'll arrive by this afternoon. I'll be in my office if you need me.
Gotcha.
I went into my office, closed the door, sat at my desk, and waited to see if any drama would start so early in the morning. I had instilled fear in the majority of my students by implementing a zero bullshit tolerance policy and making examples out of people who tried to come for me before I came for them. I was among the youngest of principals in the D.C. public school system, and I was determined not to fail in the position that I had held for the past 3 years. That was why I was concerned about seeing the test scores. I didn't want to appear to be in an all-out panic, though. The federal No Child Left Behind Act had forced the D.C. public schools to comply with adequate yearly progress rules, AYP, or face major consequences. A lot of the schools failed miserably on a yearly basis. We had failed the first year that I was here, but I turned it around by threatening to put foot to ass with any of my teachers whom I felt had funky attitudes. I did not literally kick them, but I made it clear the heads would roll if they did not start assessing the students who were struggling and offer them additional assistance. I did not care when they did it, before school, during recess, or after school, but if they truly cared, it should not have been a big deal. Teachers customarily have a shorter work day than most and get summers off, so it was what it was. I was about to eat my vanilla crumb muffin and drink the coffee that I had purchased at a local organic market on my way to work when my cell phone rang. It was Tevin. This was going to be a test to gauge how he received being neglected via text messages. Honestly, he was about to get a piece of my mind. I smirked and answered the phone.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chemistry. It's Tevin. I acted as if his number wasn't already saved in my phone, rather less, already embedded in my memory.
Oh, hey, I didn't recognize the number. How are you?
I'm fine. I take it that you arrived home safely last night? I sent you a text.
Wow, did you? I didn't see it.
I'm not too hype on texting. It seems kind of detached and impersonal to me.
He got quiet for a few seconds.
I see. Well, I wasn't sure if I should call you that late. I didn't want to risk waking you up.
Then your plan worked because I was sleeping like a baby. I took a sip of my coffee.
But in theory, the chime from the text message could have woken me up as well.
My tone reeked of sarcasm.
I'm just saying.
True. Anyway, I'll keep in mind that you are not a fan of text messages.
Let me ask you a question, Tevin. Before there was text messaging, how did you communicate with people who were not right in front of you? How did you let them know you were thinking about them, that they were special to you?
Well, I would call them like I'm doing right now.
I played with my muffin, which looked and smelled delicious, but I didn't dare put even a morsel in my mouth. I didn't feel like we were at the point where I wanted to be eating on the phone while we spoke. That was kind of a trifling habit, but with my schedule, it was not unusual for me to engage in it.
That's how I would communicate, he continued. As for letting a person know that I'm thinking about them, I would probably send them flowers with a card, letting them know my sentiments.
I like flowers, so maybe I'll receive some one day.
Maybe you will.
Both of us got quiet, as though we were searching the caverns of our minds to come up with a topic. We had spoken for hours the night before, so it was quite awkward.
I'd better go check and make sure the hallways are empty, except for security guards. Some of my students will do the most when they think they can get away with it.
You have a lot of students play hooky?
I giggled. Yeah, there are some usual suspects. Most will straighten up once I alert their parents and they get in trouble. The ones with parents who don't care are a different issue.
Lilybeth was knocking on my door.
Come in!
I winced when I realized that I had screamed in Tevin's ear. Sorry for yelling.
It's cool. I'll let you go so you can hold down the fort. I have some patient files to look over. My first surgery isn't until around noon.
Sounds good.
I gasped when Lilybeth entered with a bouquet comprised of a few dozen roses and several clusters of baby's breath.
Oh my goodness!
What happened? Is everything okay? Tevin asked from the other end of the line.
I snickered and grinned from ear to ear. My secretary just entered with a beautiful bouquet of flowers.
Thank you.
Lilybeth set the vase down on my desk and handed me the card that was attached to a plastic stick.
You're assuming they're for me?
He asked.
They could be from one of your other admirers.
Oh, I'm sure they're from you. I blushed, even though he couldn't see my face.
That was very sweet of you.
So am I forgiven about texting?
Yes, you're forgiven. Lilybeth smiled and left out as I opened the card.
It read,
Chemistry, I realize that we just met, but I want to be the example of what a man should be instead of another example of what a man should never be. You are beautiful, smart, and entertaining, and I hope to see you again. XOXOXO, Tevin.
These are wonderful. Thank you, I repeated.
Well?
Well, what?
Can I see you again?
I could tell that he was somewhere between anxious and nervous about my reply.
Sure. I told you last night that we could hang out again.
I don't want to hang with you. I want to court you. There is a difference.
I sat there in silence for a moment. Tevin, I agree that there's a definite chemistry between us, but I don't necessarily think that I'm relationship material right now.
Do you not remember my poem from last night?
Yes, I remember your poem. I also remember the painful expression on your face as you recited it.
I want to be the one to change that expression to something more exhilarating, more gratified, and more surreal.
He paused.
And while I definitely agree that there is chemistry, I see more than that. I see a possibility.
Damn it. This man is about to take my breath away, I thought to myself. Then that thought was immediately followed by fear. The fear of being hurt again. Tevin's word game was tight, but I had been hoodwinked by the creme de la creme of slick talkers before. When I didn't say anything, he added,
"But we can take things slow. How about dinner tonight?" I couldn't help but laugh.
That's what you call taking it slow.
That's what I call breaking bread together and continuing to get to know each other. You can pick the spot.
No, you pick it this time, I insisted. Your choice of restaurant will tell me something about you.
The only thing that it might tell you is that I like good food.
How about the Ocean Air Seafood Room on F and 12th Streets, about 7:30? Ever been there?
Not yet, but I've heard nothing but great things about it.
Count me in. For the rest of the school day, I felt like I was hiking on air. There was something about the man that turned me on. However, I didn't want to risk actually falling for him, so I did the one thing that any confused woman attempting to avoid falling in love would do. I went over to Anthony's place after work and fucked the shit out of him.
Chapter 5.
You never lose by loving. You always lose by holding back. Barbara DeAngelis.
Where have you been? Anthony asked the second he opened the front door to his house.
I don't have to report to you. I entered, kicked off my brown leather pumps, and let my tan suit jacket fall to the floor. We're friends with benefits, remember? As I walked straight upstairs to his bedroom, he shut the door and followed me.
I understand all that. Friends with benefits, cuddle buddies, whatever. But does that mean we can't socialize outside of my bedroom?
What the hell do you want to socialize for, Anthony? I sit in front of his bed and started removing all of my clothing. We start socializing and you might catch feelings or I might catch feelings, and then that fucks up the entire arrangement.
He crossed his arms in rebelliousness. But as soon as I took my bra and panties off, his eyes were glued to my body.
I don't like the term arrangement. You make it sound like I'm a male escort or something.
The only thing that I want you to escort me to is a hellified climax so I can hop in the shower and keep my dinner appointment.
Appointment or date? He asked vehemently.
I smacked my lips and didn't bother to respond.
Anthony was about 5'9", much shorter than Tevin, had a few extra pounds on the belly, light-skinned with a bald head, and a gorgeous smile. We had met about a year before in the produce section of Shoppers Food Warehouse. Before I actually picked up a man in a grocery store, I always believed that it being a hot spot was nothing more than an urban legend or a marketing ploy for certain major chains. But there he was. Grinning at me as I selected some limes to make a homemade key lime pie. I had made it clear to him from the beginning that I was not interested in dating him. But we did hang out, movies, dinner, walks in the park, until it came time for me to cut the bullshit and confiscate the dick. I made sure that we were both tested for every STD known to man before we actually did anything. He bitched about it at first. But when I informed him that getting tested meant the possibility of one day fucking me, and not getting tested meant that he might as well lose my number, he got the test done.
Are you going to stand over there staring at me, or are you going to come over here and commence to fucking? I asked and then turned around, making a show of exposing my entire caramel ass as I climbed on top of his bed.
I love the way that you hit all of this from the back. My pussy is in distress. Please put it out of its misery.
I could hear him approaching behind me, removing his wife beater and shorts along the way. This is the last time I'm doing this chemistry. That's what you said the last time, and the time before that, and the time before that.
I turned over, lay on my back, spread my legs, and started